transmittically on the boom a distance from the driven element. A shorter element acts, interacts on a phase nature to cause the directionality going forward of the electromagnetic radiation, and the reflector is a little bit longer than the driven center-fed element, and it's meant to phase reflect so that a significant portion of the electromagnetic radiation pattern is thrown forward. It's a directional design for an antenna.
Okay, some of those questions would sound completely stupid because those, I was trying to look at the questions that were asked by the people completely not oriented in the art. So that was, in other words, insulated or not. That is the question, so of course we don't have to insulate it, it doesn't make any difference. So, does it depend on how you intend to mount parasitic elements, insulating the elements above the boom, or it will, and will it have a negligible effect for the boom, and if yes, then what kind of effect it is? Back to you.
Well, like I mentioned earlier, changing between the conductive connections of the parasitic elements or the insulated will slightly detune the structure, so you might want to rearrange the distance of the reflector or the distance of the director or the length of the elements, because, you know, electronically it kind of alters things a little bit, but fundamentally it'll still operate if properly tuned as a directional antenna.
What is exactly parasitic in Yagi?
Well, the idea are that the parasitic elements, the director and the reflector, are not powered by your transmission line. The power that they pick up is by the local near-field effect of electromagnetic waves being emitted from the driven element. So it's parasitic in that it doesn't have its own power supply. It's kind of absorbing some of the emissions from the driven element and then re-reflecting them either forward or back depending upon the phase relationship, which is determined by its relative length related to the driven element.
Before that, I sent you a beautiful picture of that six-element quad that had a plastic element on it, and I suggested that you could print it on it. Okay, but I didn't say anything about the boom. It would be good if you look, can have a look at that picture, but anyhow, the question is, can wooden boom be used?
Yes.
Okay, beautiful. Number three, can the element be mounted at the end or not in the center?
It's usually a good practice to mount both the parasitic element and the driven element in the center. You can theoretically off-center things, but that complicates things a great deal and doesn't really necessarily add anything to the situation. Say for some bizarre reason, rather than put a driven element that's a center-fed, you build it as a Wyndham. Now, the benefit theoretically of a Wyndham is that you might be able to operate at other frequencies. But the reflector and the director are both constructed specifically for that single frequency range, that band. So if you try to drive a off-center dipole in the center as a driven element, your reflector and your director aren't going to work right, and it's no longer going to be a directional Yagi anymore. So that's why you probably could not find anywhere a off-center fed Yagi.
Question.
Yes, Brian?
On a Yagi, you have a director and reflector. But what makes a director, and what makes a reflector, and then you have something called front-to-back, I think something front-to-back projection or something like that?
It's front-to-back, well, it's front-to-back a lot of things, but it's front-to-back gain. Basically, you're putting in a lot more. The radiation pattern is much stronger in the front than it is in the back. And the difference is the net gain for that particular Yagi. What makes a director as opposed to a reflector is the length of the element. If you ever look at a three-element Yagi, the driven element is the thing in the center. It's, for all intents and purposes, it's a center-fed dipole with an impedance-correcting little addition, because the parasitic elements will detune your center-fed and will change the impedance, and you want it to be 50 ohms. So there's an impedance-matching circuit and a center-fed dipole in the middle. At one end is a shorter element. It has to be a certain percentage shorter than the driven element to act as a means to push the RF forward. If the element is a certain length longer than the driven element, instead of driving it forward, it will reflect it backwards. So it's the length of the reflector and the director. Once the director is shorter, the reflector is longer. That causes that difference in characteristics. When an RF wave hits it, on one it sends it forward, and the other it reflects it backwards.
So you're saying the director is a shorter element?
Yes.
Then you want to get a Yagi with something with a really high, I guess it's called front-to-back projection or something like that?
Well, it depends upon why you're choosing a Yagi. Most people choose a Yagi because they want to get as much of the signal in the direction that they want it to be, rather than an omnidirectional antenna, which has its uses. You want a focused beam going in one direction. The more elements that you have, to be the point of diminishing returns, the higher the gain going forward, and the less output is emitted in the rear. So the front to back gets higher and higher and higher as you increase the number of. Usually there's only one reflector used, and sometimes you use one director, sometimes two, sometimes three. You have to adjust the distances between them because that has an effect as well. But, you know, the more elements you have up until a point, the higher the front-to-back ratio of power output is.
Yes. Okay, thanks. You also the good point. So if you have a dipole and you imagine the circle around it, a dipole, a vertical dipole, and it has 360 degrees, right? So if you look at the single degree, at that particular single degree, you have 1/360th of the power. And we're not yet talking about a close field and a far field and the inverse below. But in Yagi antenna, we're trying to push the energy in one direction only. And here is actually one corresponding question. Is there a limit to the number of director elements a Yagi antenna has? Of course, I was laughing when I was reading that question. Back to you.
Well, like I said, it becomes a case of diminishing returns. Initially, you know, if you take a three-element Yagi with one director and you redesign it with two directors, you'll get a little bit more gain out of it. If you then you probably have to increase the size of the boom, though. If you then try something with three directors, you'll get some additional gain. But as you introduce more and more directors, the additional gain becomes less and less and less, and at one point or another, it becomes, you know, purely theoretical. You know, putting yet another director on something will maybe give you a 0.1 dB gain and kind of destabilize the mechanics of the whole damn thing. So, I mean, after a time, there's no such thing as, well, three is useful, four is useless. It becomes diminishing returns. You'll see people out there with four directors, probably see them with five. You're not going to see them with eight or nine, though.
But the more elements the director, the Yagi has, it's more directional, at least in theory. I would say it is limited by the boom. The number of directors is unlimited. Of course, all you said is true. Back to you.
Yeah, I think the one second, Brian. I think that the point to take away is that the improvement in directionality increases less and less as you increase multiples of directors. In other words, if you get a 3 dB gain by putting in a second director, you're not going to get another 3 dB gain by putting in a third director. You'll get 2 dBs, and you'll just get 1 dB gain, and you'll get 0.3 dB gain, and you'll get 0.1 dB gain. So each additional director does not add up like simple addition. It becomes a case of diminishing return. And each additional director requires a bigger boom and more mechanical stability and wind resistance issues and all kinds of things.
I agree.
Okay, Brian, you wanted to ask something?
I was just thinking here, brainstorming a little bit. Is there such a thing as a circular antenna, sort of like a flat disc, that could automatically, electronically segment out certain parts of the internals and create its own focal beam, you know, of RF, without actually physically rotating?
No. You'd have to have some method of changing either the electronic aspects and especially the mechanical aspects of the radiator. We've mentioned in the past, you know, the most obvious example of something that changes its own mechanical aspect is SEPR IR antennas that have a roll of, I think, vanadium steel elements that kind of spool and unspool to change the mechanical length of the dipoles themselves. But you'd have to somehow change connections or do something interesting electronically or mechanically. You can't just kind of force a uniform disc into operating different ways. You know, you have to have some kind of very interesting mechanism, which I couldn't begin to guess how you'd accomplish it. There are such things as circularly polarized antennas that have an inherent kind of loss versus a horizontal-to-horizontal antenna transmission or a vertical-to-vertical. You know, if you try and theoretically, if you try and use a horizontal antenna to work a vertical antenna, theoretically, the equation would read that you'd get 0 dBs. You get minus, you know, infinity or something. But nothing works like that. So you end up with a decrease in the signal strength. If you had a circularly polarized antenna, it would have about 3 dB of loss in the horizontal case and 3 dB of loss in the vertical case. But that's not exactly what you asked. But I thought I'd throw it in.
A comment?
Sure, John.
Well, I have seen these arrays of, and this is going up in the microwave range now, these arrays of patch antennas where each one of these patch antennas is driven with a little a variable phase device that can be programmed in to vary the phase to that particular antenna as well as vary the amplitude. And by varying the phase and amplitude of this array of patches, you can get a steerable beam out of it. I think that may be what he was referring to. Okay.
Okay, I'll throw it to Brian. It didn't quite sound that way, and you need very sophisticated electronics to make those adjustments to the separate little elements that kind of combine as an antenna. But were you alluding to that, Brian?
Actually, yes. That's what I was kind of saying. You know, is there a way to build an antenna without physical movement that could go ahead and redirect and direct in different directions by piecing together different parts of the antenna either via relays or some other method, maybe electronically, be able to go ahead and create, let's say, the equivalent of a longer wavelength or a shorter wavelength?
Comment on one YDY?
Antenna, many antennas, but not on this frequency, some much higher frequency, 2.4 gigahertz. It's being used commercially right now. If you want to have a directional beam, steer it, that means the directional beam that has regulation direction by the phase delay. But
yeah, I just want to throw in that it's not really a disc of metal. It's a lot of little pieces of metal that can be electronically controllable and can be combined and phase shifted and other such. So that's what a patch is. I wouldn't ever describe it as a single element, a single conductor that has multiple connections. You have to separate the small conductors, otherwise they get swamped as you know, combining by themselves. Hank, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I've seen these 10-meter antennas. I think they were actually CB antennas that were modified, where they were consisted of three verticals, and they switched the directionality of the antenna by phasing one of the or switching one of the verticals out of the circuit or not. I don't know if that's applicable to what you guys are discussing.
Comment. Oh, okay. Yes, what's your comment?
If you have an array at HF, if you have an array of phased verticals and you have what's called a phasing harness, which is a length of coaxial cable that are designed to introduce a known amount of phase shifting to antennas by shifting in or jumping out those phase shifting lengths of coax, you can come up with a phased array verticals, which will let you electronically steer your beam in various different directions. To do that at HF, they use what's called a phase harness, which is these arrays of lengths of coax that are cut specifically to introduce a known amount of phase shift. When you do it up at microwave frequencies, like up at 2.4 gigahertz or whatnot, then I think they have these chips that will actually, depending on the binary number that you digitally program them with, will introduce a known amount of phase shift to each of these patch antennas, which will let you electronically steer the beam. Go ahead.
That was the answer I wanted to hear. So it takes me one more step. If you have an antenna that is horizontally polarized, and you're transmitting to an antenna that is vertically polarized, will there be like a null signal?
I mentioned that earlier. Theoretically, yes, but in practical terms, no. You just have a decreased gain on your signal.
So if you have a horizontally polarized antenna, is there a way to go ahead and turn it, let's say, 90 degrees to make it vertically polarized?
Not electronically. As far as I'm aware, you can only do that mechanically. If anyone knows how you can do that electronically, please tell me.
Mechanically, if you take the Yagi that is horizontally placed, put it vertically, that means the element will be 90 degrees to the previous one. Now you're changing the polarization.
Yeah, but that wasn't my question. My question is, as far as I'm aware, you can easily just twirl a boom and turn it from vertical to horizontal. That's mechanically changing it. I'm saying that I got the feeling that Brian was curious about whether there was an electronic way, which I am unaware of.
No, there is no electronic way known to me, but if you want to have a polarization, you put it at half of 90 degrees. So you're going to have two polarizations at once, but not perfectly.
Comment?
Yeah, please comment. By the way,
a set of horizontal elements and a set of vertical elements and just switch between them if you wanted to go horizontal polarization or vertical polarization, so you wouldn't need to mechanically rotate them. Or you could go with a circularly polarized antenna, which will give a little bit of loss, but that way you'll be able to communicate whether it's horizontal or vertical or at some angle of polarization. Good.
Okay, but to me it's the mechanical orientation of the radiating elements as opposed to magical little phase resonance changing circuits and such. That's what I have in mind when I talk about physical, mechanical versus electronic. If you're building in a built-in horizontal and vertical pair of antennas and you're just switching between the antenna feeds, that's not electronic. That's simply, you know, mechanical switching between two different radiating elements with different polarization angles.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to the next one because we have a lot of material. So is it better to use copper than aluminum for directors and reflectors? Of course, as I said, stupid questions, but to you.
Yeah. Aluminum is a fine metal for radiating antennas and parasitic elements. People use aluminum elements all the time.
Yeah, so it does make a difference apart from how much you spend for it. So is the gain of directional antenna required, and what does it come from? What is the gain of directional antenna required, and what does it come from? Back to you.
I don't have a clue what that means.
Me neither.
A comment?
Okay. Can a wire and or water pipe be used? Back to you.
Yes, but John, you wanted to say something?
Did Wesley ask what is the gain of a directional antenna?
No, I'm reading the most stupid questions that I could find. So the question was, is the gain of a directional antenna required, and where does it come from?
Well, okay, the gain of an antenna comes from the fact that rather than radiating the power in all directions like the fictitious isotropic antenna, you are radiating it in a preferred direction. That's what causes the gain, and that's why they use the term gain over isotropic. The isotropic antenna, very easy to calculate because you just take your power and you assume it's being radiated at all 4 pi steradians in the entire solid angle of a sphere. Of course, that theoretically doesn't exist. I guess the closest thing to it is like the way a star radiates, the way the sun radiates. But when they say gain over isotropic, they mean that rather than radiate in all directions of the sphere, you're concentrating it in a preferred direction, hence it exhibits gain over isotropic. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. absolutely agree. So can wire and water pipe be used? Yeah, of course it can. The only thing is that we want to have a small, very much comfortable antenna to use. What is a polarization of Wi-Fi, Dr. Roy?
What is the polarization of Wi-Fi? What does that have to do with the Aggies, by the way?
Of course, I told you. I was trying to find the questions you would love. Or you would just think, who could ask some such question? Back to you.
I believe it's horizontally.
No, not necessarily. Wi-Fi, yeah, I mean, there are Wi-Fi units where the antennas are hidden inside the case, but there are others where they're popping out of the back. You could orient them vertically. You could orient them horizontally. They're kind of like multiple rabbit ears.
Of course you can, because you have an array of small elements that are driven by phase delay, and you can maneuver the beam. You can do it in any direction you want. I agree with that. What does the Yagi antenna work? Why does the Yagi antenna work better than when it's mounted lower? That was a good question, because some of the ham radio operators said that when he put the Yagi antenna very high up, he didn't have such a good reception when he put it down, lower. Dr. Roy.
Well, again, the primary driven element for a Yagi is a center-fed dipole. We've talked many, many times in the past that one of the least popular things you want to do with a center-fed dipole is to mount it very close to the ground, because the reflections will tend to lead most of the radio waves going straight up, turning it into a non-vertical incident sky wave or a cloud warmer. Good for very nearby conversations, terrible for DX.
Comment.
Okay, Brian, comment.
Actually, yeah, comment, well, more, I guess more of a question than a comment. What is the frequency range of Yagis?
Anyone you want.
Within reason, you know. If you start to get, if you ever get the idea of building a Yagi that's resonant for ultra-low frequencies, I hope you have a lot of machinery.
Yeah, I mean, a micro printed PCB, if we would say. They exist, but you know.
Well, the point is, like almost every antenna, they're all scalable with mechanical limitations.
Is there a Yagi that would cover, let's say, for example, 80 meters through 20?
You would need to have those driven elements in addition to the reflectors and the drivers. So that's a case of multiple driven elements in addition to multiple radiator and reflectors, because keep in mind that the radiator and reflector are frequency dependent as well. And so a reflector driver will work on one band but won't work on the others.
So it's stacked then?
When I think of stacked, I think of vertically stacked. In this case, it's horizontally stacked on the boom.
Right, horizontally stacked on the vertical boom. Okay, this I understand. But how do you split the coax? How does that work?
Well, you'd have probably some phase strap so that it would be in phase with everything else. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of antennas that have multiple connections. So you can also stack Yagis horizontally, vertically, rather, you know, one on top of the other in a tower. And so you just have a phase-correcting strap between the two. So it's doable.
going to the next one. Now, what is the difference between vertical and horizontal polarization and how to make the Yagi antenna properly polarized? We already covered that. Okay, mechanically you put it either vertically or horizontally. But now you have a stupid question, and I laughed from that. Does it mean that the boom of the Yagi antenna must be vertical for vertical polarization? Back to you.
Now.
Can I use square plates or flat rectangular sheets instead of aluminum rods at Yagi antennas? In other words, does it matter?
I don't think there's any benefit, and there's probably complicating aspects. I would tend to think that you want to keep your parasitic reflector and the director as mechanically simple as possible. I don't see the benefit in flattening the wire. You probably could get away with it. I don't know exactly what kind of phase problems it might introduce, but I don't see the point of the exercise.
Well, it's not about the point. It's about the answering the question. So, yes, you can. If you properly design and calculate the antenna, you could use any shape of the directors and reflectors on Yagi antennas. But how it performs, I don't know. Back to you.
Yeah, I got the feeling John wanted to say something. I was mistaken. Okay, Brian?
So, let's say you want to optimize your Yagi for one particular band, and then you want to have another Yagi for another band, and another one for another band. So that would be three that would be stacked vertically, but no, horizontal, but on a vertical boom, correct?
Okay.
All right, so the question is, and this is where I'm a little slightly confused, is how would you take one piece of coax jumping between the three in order to go ahead and split that between each antenna or band?
It's probably not worth anyone's while to do something like that since they're different bands to begin with. There's no real reason to kind of save a couple of bucks in coax. Most people, I would assume, would simply have three coax cables running down, and if they didn't have three radios or three inputs, they would have an ABC switch to switch from, you know, one band to the other. There's no service to be gotten from, you know, connecting non-resonant antennas to a cable or such, so... That's a curious question that I don't think most people bother to think about because they just don't do them. There's a good reason to strap together the same type of resonant antennas to boost the total output, and that requires, as I mentioned, phase strapping so that the signals are all in phase. Since the non-resonant antennas aren't going to be radiating, you don't have to really worry about phase adjustments, but there's little reason to wire them up for the wrong frequency.
Thank you.
Yeah, you were doubling with someone.
Oh, thank you very much. That was a good answer.
Okay, very good. Back to you, Wes.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. If you think that you don't have the antennas, you have a coaxial cable and you have three resistors, if each one of the resistors is 50 ohm, you're not going to have 50 ohm as a total load if you connect them in parallel, let's say. So calculation of the 50 ohm and the phase, that would be kind of a challenge. Although, in HF, we have a horizontal dipole that has traps, and it could be multi-band spectrum.
You know, not around here, but down south where people own enough land to have antenna farms, it is not that unusual to have multiple phased array stacked Yagis on towers. So they accomplish it. They match the impedances and they match the phases, and it works. Of course, you know, they have antenna systems that cost $10,000, $20,000. You know, but what's money, I guess?
Comment.
Yes, Brian?
Isn't the concept similar to what they do with the very large array in New Mexico with all of those dishes?
To an extent, they phase they phase correct and they match impedances so that they turn multiple radiators into effectively a mechanically enormous antenna. Yeah.
The next one. What would happen if we make all elements of Yagi antenna the same length? How will this affect reception? Back to you.
It wouldn't be directional anymore. Otherwise, you'd still probably get decent reception from a center-fed dipole in the driven element. But you would no longer have a radiator or a director or a reflector. That's what would happen.
What would happen if I put many antennas very close together to receive a weak signal? Would they receive the signal worse than only one antenna due to the, they use the word light. Okay, due to the light signal collapsing in many antennas instead of just one.
Once again, whoever wrote this up needs to find something else to do for a living. If you increase the density of antennas, you increase the gain. There's a lovely postcard K2RIW in his moon bounce days where, I forget exactly, but it was a massive array of Yagis that were stacked, I think, 3x3 or 6x3 or something. And the reason he did that was not because he wanted a funny postcard, but he wanted about the best gain from his antenna systems as possible to receive a signal bouncing off the moon.
Okay, next one. Why are the lengths of the reflector and director different to the dipole? In a Yagi antenna. We already covered it. Okay, 15. The question is funny. I wrote it. The question is funny, as professionals may often not think about it or say it differently. It is a need for total stranger to ask the question that can open your eye wide enough. So the question: what would happen if you connect 2.4 gigahertz Yagi antennas together with the coupler and point them in opposite direction? Back to you.
You'd get signals from opposite directions?
That is correct. That is correct, you do. Okay, two Yagi antennas on the same port could work, but you need to match the impedance of the two antennas by joining the feed lines from the two antennas with the power divider for the proper impedance matching.
Comment?
Yes, please comment.
When you talk about combining two antennas now, is this type of combiner, is it a zero-degree combiner or is it a 90-degree combiner? Because depending how you combine the signals, the phase of these two signals coming in together will combine differently. So when you use a power divider combiner, they have in phase combiners dividers, and they have hybrid or 90-degree divider combiners. So but I think that's dependent on that.
This is your weird question. You do it.
I don't know. To be honest, I don't know because I never thought about it. I had to take some time and think about it. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
Yeah, the problem is that this is a very non-serious individual someplace who wrote this nonsense up, and we're unfortunately treating it like legitimate questions, and I really do appreciate John's expertise and his help. You're putting in a lot more thought to this than the guy who wrote this stuff down, I assure you.
Okay. What is the difference between Yagi antenna and parabolic antenna? Does size matter for antennas like those? Back to you.
A lot of things matter, not necessarily size. It's more of a factor of the number of driven elements and other such, although size has an effect. And a parabolic antenna is a completely different, although directional, design. But it doesn't use the same principles as a Yagi UDA antenna. It doesn't use parasitic elements, reflectors, and directors and such.
Actually, we can think about the dish antenna as a parabolic mirror. But for the given frequency, that frequency comes to the dish, bounce from the dish by an angle, and that angle is that parabolic shape of that mirror, and all of those reflections goes to one single point, and we have active elements in that very much point, and that's why we can receive or we can transmit. Do you agree with that, Dr. Ray?
Yeah. A very weird YouTube a week or two ago where the guy was planning to build some kind of a reflector for the sun to burn up things. And he was so badly thought out that he designed a circular reflector before he realized that he needed a parabolic reflector to focus all the different frequencies at the same point. But yeah, that's the principle of a parabolic mirror, which is utterly, totally, and completely different than a Yagi.
Absolutely true. Now, how does having a bent antenna impact reception? So imagine that your boom is bent. How does it impact reception? Back to you.
Well, it distorts the geometry of the reflector and the director's phase interaction with the driven elements will most likely make the directional gain worse as the more you distort it.
I agree. Why are the lengths of the reflector and director different to the dipole in Yagi antenna? Yes, okay. Excuse my language, back to you.
We kind of covered that at least twice, maybe three times. I lost count.
Okay, so let's go to the next one. Yeah, I was trying to make a fun from that, talking about it. So we have a FX for CR that is a new radio. Actually, it's a new generation of the radio that costs $558. It's Chinese. It's quite nice stuff. the TX and RX goes from 80 meters to 6 meters, 2 inches TFT display, which is TFT is good. Spectrum display, we don't know what is the brightness in nits, but what I saw on the YouTube, it looks like 600 nits, not much more than that. Let me drop. Okay, the spectrum display and 48 kilohertz waterfall plot, dual dual VFO, it's A and B, so it looks like it operates like two receivers, which is good, with the split mode operation, which is also good because you can leave the frequency on the station of the station of interest and use another VFO just to scan the band, but you still have the visual view on the waterfall. So it has internal USB sound card with the serial communication via USB, built-in Bluetooth, and just adjustable DSP, digital noise reduction, ultra-wide input voltage. Okay, so it's from 9 volts to 18 volts, whatever you have handy, but it doesn't have a battery built in. So it looks nice, it's Chinese. Dr. Roy, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is how much does it output? I couldn't find any place, probably because it has a very, very, very low output.
20 watts.
I didn't see that anywhere. I'm not impressed. It's Chinese, so it's of questionable quality. It's impossible to probably get it fixed, and it has no reputation. So I wouldn't touch it, with anything. So, but you know, everyone's free to have a different opinion.
Okay, the next one. How do you measure HFDX propagation? And all of it is, I sent you the link to the article from 2005, but also the video, if you had a chance to look at it. And actually, we're talking about indexes, so A index, K index, and whatsoever, solar activity. So if you could, it would be the HF propagation using solar indices, if you don't mind to say a few words about it. Okay.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we covered this before. There's more to propagation than sunspot activity, unfortunately, because we discussed this a lot during this past spring and summer, where the sunspot indexes were very good. And matter of fact, the kind of automated little applets that you could put on your web, either your website or even on your computer screen, said that propagation was going to be good. And I tuned into 10 meters, and it was dead as a doornail. So I think it was a case of geomagnetic storms and such affecting F1 and F2. So, you know, things are a little bit more complicated than that 2005 article, but, you know, it's good to kind of brush up on your propagation, but, you know, we could spend the next 3 hours discussing sunspot activity and propagation here.
Okay. Interesting. If you think it's worth it, you can put the link to the article, especially the quick guide. It sounds reasonable. It sounds like very much helpful. It's a short, compact stuff on your side. Now, another one. No more white noise. There is a Kiegu GNR1 digital audio noise filter. Now, this one is $215. It is a noise reduction unit that is surprisingly good in performance. that will improve the reception for many ham radio operators who suffer with the noise problem. Let me drop. Okay, 3 watt output, input and output volume adjustment, high and low input impedance, select double audio output, 3.5 millimeter stereo output RCA, of course it's Chinese. Headphone output, automatic switch, headphone, speaker output, whatever. And again, the model number is Ziggo, but it's actually being pronounced Ziggo, Ziggo GNR, GNR1. What I think about it, I mean, if you're familiar with that, I would like to hear your opinion before I say mine. Dr. Roy.
Yeah, different people pronounce that different ways. I think in Chinese the X is pronounced like SH, so it probably is a little bit like Zhigo GNR1. Apparently it's a decent noise-reducing device. It seems to be a little bit better handling a constant type of noise with a strong signal than a random noise and a weaker signal. So is it any particularly better than BHI? I don't think so. I mean, they're probably slightly better for different purposes. Like most noise reduction circuits in radios and separate noise reduction, you know, these noise reduction devices are basically programmable digital signal processors. So, you know, six of one, half a dozen the other. It's not a miracle. It's not inherently fantastically better than the other digital signal processor noise reduction devices available to hams.
Thank you for that. But for me, it is actually some sort of sophisticated equalization device of year 2000 that was the beginning of a digital technology, much worse than it is now in the free version of DaVinci Resolve 19, which is a video editing program, and it's a free version, it's free to download, and it does have also graphical display showing you the affected frequencies, so instead of spending $215 for it, you can actually use that program that I told about and connect your microphone. But the good thing is that Ziggo GNR1 does not need to use the computer. And the question is how that compares, and here is why I included that question. Let me drop it. How it compares to noise blanker, known as adjustable bandpass filter at low frequency, I'm talking about low frequency audio amplifier of your radio, or notch filter. So if you're talking about a notch filter, it's exactly a more primitive low frequency cutoff filter of narrow characteristic. So on the picture that I showed you from that video, it was the ICOM 7300 that has both the noise blanker and the notch filter. There was significant difference when the guy added on the top of it another box with that Ziggo GNR1. So how the GNR1 differs from what I was talking about? Back to you, Dr. Wright.
Again, the GNR and the BHI and a bunch of others use digital signal processing chips. They do an analysis of non-random noise, and they kind of invert the phase and kind of try to blank them out with as little audio artifact as possible to to one degree or the other. The BHI works, I'm told, a little bit better with weaker signals, but it introduces a little bit more significant artifacts. It's different than simple things like notch filters for a just notching out a certain frequency range where there's noise in it. This kind of takes in the whole spectrum, analyzes the distribution and the frequency, and tries to make phase corrections on it. So it has a much more sophisticated chip than blankers and you know, just kind of filters themselves have.
I agree with you. We're talking about the low frequency processing. 7760 Icon, the $6,000 radio. I believe they put everything that they could into having everything in one box. But anyhow, thank you for that. And now I'm gonna need a how. To have a help of our space professional Paul, because I sent him and I sent you the two articles. Any of you can become NASA scientist, real story. If Paul could comment on it, and you, Dr. Roy, too. Dr. Roy, back to you.
I thought you wanted Paul to do this.
Okay, Paul, can you pick up the phone, the microphone?
F2CC. Hi, Wes, WS2N. I read that. I was disappointed. I thought it was going to be a series of questions, you know, for anybody, where if you answered all the questions, you'd be able to figure out if you would be able to become a scientist. But it wasn't that, so. I just scanned through it. Anyway, back to you, Wes.
Okay. So there was the, there was a guy, Gerald Ace Hart, and he had education in mathematics, and he wasn't really, with NASA, but he decided to do some amateur job like we amateurs do with ham radio, and he was interested in what's going on over there. And that is about Jupiter. He then was recognized by his ability to create a program that would color the turbulences on the Jupiter and other planets, and became recognized by NASA and working with NASA as the citizen scientist. But my question to you is, could you make a comment on JunoCam, and can you make a comment, Paul, on the Mars by itself? What is Mars? I mean, not Mars, I'm sorry. Jupiter by itself, what is made from, and some of your comments in this area. Back to you.
Well, you have the Juno spacecraft orbiting in a polar fashion around Jupiter. And originally it was going to have a 53-day orbit, and the idea was to shrink it down to a 14-day orbit. And one of the main retro rocket on that didn't fail, but they were worried about it failing, so they just used gravity assist and other little thrusters on it to eventually shrink that orbit to where it goes around the whole planet, you know, half the amount of time instead of, you know, 50 days. So they made a lot of discoveries, you know, with the atmosphere and the lightning and everything. They did a lot of tests. They did optical tests where they looked back at the sun with with the planet in a way, and they could tell exactly the percentages of chemicals and everything in it within the planet. So they found out a lot of stuff, but their main thing that they did was confirm that inside of the planet, it's not only liquid, it's not only liquid hydrogen, but way down deep, it's almost like a solid hydrogen. That's what's really generating this gigantic magnetic field. So they more or less confirmed that from the early Galileo orbiting spacecraft that went around 10 years earlier. So between the two missions, Galileo, and then, which is